Hello and welcome to the next installment of the Career Vision podcast. For those that are new here, Career Vision is an organization out of Glen Ellen that helps young people find what they should be doing eventually based on aptitude tests, or people that are our age, me and Matt, who I will introduce here in a second here, find something new based on what they like to do, what they're good at, and what suits them. So it helps them with their career journey eventually. So, and that's what this podcast is about, but you can go to careervision.org to learn more. And joining me on today's episode is Matt Lindner.
Hey, Mike.
How's it going?
It's going great. Pleasure to be here.
A marketing manager, correct,
now? Yep.
But has had a long career of different jobs, and we're going to get into all of that, because that's kind of what this podcast is about, is kind of showing people that no journey is like, it's not paper, like it's not a cookie cutter, right?
Right.
And how we start every episode off is a shout out to our high school. So, yeah. Matt.
Yeah, Mike and I are both Lake Zurich High School alums, about a decade or so apart, roughly. But
yeah, I think this is the first time two Lake Zurich alums have been on a major station's podcast.
Yeah, I'm not a whole lot of us that are in the media or media adjacent. So, good to see a couple of small town kids that made it big.
It's kind of neat, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But when you were at Lake Zurich High School, yes, did you know or have an idea of what you wanted to do?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think anybody who knows exactly what they want to do in high school or even college to some degree, you know, you are in the minority. I mean, gosh, I'm 42 years old and I still don't know for sure what I want to do with the rest of my life. So, there's a lot of high school kids that feel that pressure, especially going off to college to know what they want to major in, to have their career path. And for some people, it is a linear career path. But, to your point, right off the top, I like that you mentioned that a lot of us are chasing those loose ends and trying to figure out where we fit in the world.
What were you like in high school?
About the same way I am now. I was fairly outgoing. I was involved in everything. I played.
What were some of the clubs? Because I think I had a bunch too. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I wrote for Bear Facts, which was a student newspaper. Yeah. I ran cross country. I did stats for the basketball team. I ran track and field. I played football my freshman year until I realized that I didn't particularly like getting hit in the head. I played baseball freshman year. I've always been fairly outgoing, but I've always had a lot of interest, right? And I think that is one of the biggest challenges that I've faced in my career, too, is being able to focus on one thing, right? And that, tying that back to, what I do for a living currently, I think that's what's great about that, is that I'm able to do a whole bunch of different things and wear a whole bunch of different hats to help a business grow.
I have found – so I've worked in a couple marketing departments where we touch every part of the business, that was my favorite part about it, and having so many different jobs before. But back to high school, did you have kind of like, maybe I want to do this, so I'm going to go to this school? What was next after?
Well, I was convinced that I was going to be a sports writer, and I eventually did it. It just took about a decade to get there.
Yeah.
Right? And along the way, I did a lot of internships. I chased a lot
of butterflies. What were some of those internships?
So I interned for the Milwaukee Brewers, actually, in 2003.
Nice.
And as a Cubs fan, I will forever and always be grateful to the Brewers for giving me the absolute best summer of my life. Being able to meet Bob Uecker, who was just as nice in person as you would hope. Being able to sit in the booth with Vin Scully, who's another Hall of Famer, during a Dodgers game at Miller Park. Learning how the sausage gets made from a baseball media relations perspective, and being able to build those relationships within the team and then within the local and national media.
That's awesome. Other internships?
Other internships. I interned with the Indiana Firebirds, who are an arena football team that no longer exists.
Arena football. There is a whole generation that has no – I think there is arena football somewhere, but doesn't know what that mutant form of football really was like. They don't know what Chicago Rush game.
Well, and we had a lot of fun too. 50 yards. We played at Conseco Fieldhouse with the Indiana Firebirds did, and then the Rush, who I was later a mascot for, as you might have seen on my LinkedIn profile.
No, I didn't. I didn't catch that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that like?
So I was their first. I was their first ever mascot. It was me and another guy. So I was his backup essentially, but I helped do a lot of the marketing as well. It was you know, it was a football player crossed with a construction worker. It was this weird sort of like hybrid in the mold of Ditka. The name was Grabowski.
Right.
So we would go out to community events. We would, I got to wear the suit during games occasionally. It was a wild experience, being able to perform in front of, at the time we were drawing about 16,000 people to Rosemont. Yeah. So we were selling out the Allstate Arena back in 2006, and it was just 2005, 2006. So it was a wild, wild experience being able to perform like that. Nobody knows who you are.
What was your first job out of college?
If we're splitting hairs here, I was on the Milwaukee Brewers game day entertainment staff.
Okay.
So that meant being one of the Brewers racing sausages, among other things. There were about 25 of us.
Really? Yeah. Okay. You need to, you already said it, but tell us how the sausage is made. Yeah. The sausage race is made.
You know, at the time, and again, this is going back 20 years, there were about 25 of us that rotated in and out of the costume, right? So, when you're on the Brew Crew, which is what they call their game day entertainment staff, we were throwing out T-shirts, we were running the kids' play area, we were doing all sorts of things. But, the sausage race itself, I have a lifetime record of like 2-52 or something like that.
So do you guys, were you tracking your records as you go, or who you were racing as?
Informally, yeah. I was mostly the Italian sausage, even though I'm German, just because I like the costume better.
Okay.
But, it's a very much a real race. You know, part of the reason why my record was atrocious is because I was racing against kids that were, coming out. They were like high school track athletes, soccer athletes. And, being a bigger guy, even back then. But also, coming out of 4 years of college, I was like, not exactly eating the healthiest diet. Well, fitness was not a priority then as it is now.
Yeah.
So, it was an amazing experience. But, that kind of brings up a point. It's not what you do when you get your foot in the door. It's not getting your foot in the door. It's what you do once your foot is in the door.
Right.
So with the Brewers, I had a summer before I went off to graduate school at the University of Miami where I needed a job. And so I emailed my boss, who was the director of media relations for the Brewers, and thankfully, I had shown that I would run through a wall for that guy and that, I wouldn't make him look bad. And so he's like, "Hey, do you want to come up and be a sausage for the summer?" I was like, "Absolutely."
Do you want to be a sausage?
Yeah.
Yes, that needs to be the title of your book.
I've had a long and winding road, and I've got a lot of stories, about being a sausage at a Bon Jovi concert in Milwaukee, about people wanting, because that was the summer after Randall Simon hit the woman.
That's right.
Yeah. So. People would want to hit you with a bat and like all that. So it was it was a crazy experience. But, I think starting off my career as a professional mascot told me that I'm not above doing any job in the workplace. I think when it comes to careers, especially borrowing a line from Kelly Leonard and the team over at Second City, you really have to have that yes and approach.
I love that. I love that. And I think that's something we've talked to with previous guests here, it is the not saying no to something, not being above anything.
Right.
And as you said, once you get in the door, you have to make the most of that opportunity because a lot of my jobs, at least, have been based on recommendations because I did a good job at this. I got recommended to this.
Right.
I got recommended to this.
Right.
So you're doing that, but you have this dream of being a sports writer still at that point?
Right. Yeah,
were you doing writing on the side, or how were you handling that?
Not at the time. So that was the summer before I decided I want to be a TV broadcaster.
Right.
Maybe become a sports anchor or a hard news reporter. I was 21 years old at the time. I really didn't know what I was doing, didn't have any responsibilities. I thought of 30 as my old age, which, now that I'm 42 is just
absurd.
Hilarious. Yeah. So, but when I was with the Brewers, I was in the media relations department. I was doing some writing, right? So I was interviewing players. I would go out to Beloit and interview some of the minor league teams. I interviewed Prince, I talked to Prince Fielder back in 2003 when he was still at Beloit.
That's a great name.
And some of those guys that were just coming up, I talked to a guy who was a pitching coach for the Dodgers at the time, but had won a bunch of games for the Brewers in the 70s. And so It was all about taking advantage of those opportunities, right?
Yeah.
Because I could have just gone into the Brewers media relations department for that summer internship and done the game notes and done everything else. But, when those opportunities to write stuff for the website back when MLB.com was in its infancy came up, I took advantage of that. And as a result, I had a portfolio that showed that I could tell a good sports story.
That's awesome. Yeah. When you started doing those interviews, were you Did you have to kind of develop or grow your confidence in doing those?
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Have these conversations? Do you remember what that was like doing that for the first time?
It is incredibly intimidating stepping into a Major League Baseball media room, especially when you are a 20-year-old rising, I think it was a rising senior in college at the time.
Yeah.
Right? I felt the need to prove that I belonged, you know, especially, you know, when you are around guys like Bob Uecker and Vin Scully and some of the local beat writers who have been covering the Brewers forever.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you have to learn how to act too. That whole adage about how there's no cheering in the press box. I mean, that is a strict rule.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and when the Cubs would come to town, as a Cubs fan back then, I'm a Cubs fan now.
Yeah.
You know, I had to remember like, hey, the Brewers are on my resume. So, you know, one of the great things about these internships, though, is being able to build your confidence in addition to being able to build your portfolio and proving that you belong. And, you know, in the case of sports writing, being able to interact with some of these higher profile people, like, you know, whether it's the manager of the team or be around the players.
Yeah.
But also learning how to act around them, too.
Yes.
You know, because it's very easy to come into one of those fun jobs and prove that you don't belong, right? I've seen it happen time and time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the, if anything, if I could go back to college, I would have done more internships. I would have interned at like a local newspaper and you know, covered a local high school. I would have interned in more corporate media relations departments in addition to sports, because the thing with those fun jobs, and you know this as a guy who has had a fun job or two in his day, the competition for those jobs is truly insane.
Insane. Insane. Even for a stadium MC that I did, like I was the very first Boomers MC.
Okay.
That was like a 2-month long audition process just to do something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, you learn on the job what you need to be doing or how to be. So after that amazing summer, what was next?
Graduate school at the University of Miami.
Yep.
So I got my master's degree in television broadcast journalism from the University of Miami. It was an accelerated program, so I got my master's in like 10, 11 months.
Wow.
And then I interned at the Fox station in Milwaukee in the sports department. I got to learn from Tom Pippins, who was one of the original ESPN anchors, and Tim Van Voren, who was a local legend, and the producing team, Brian Graham, who's still a great friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to cover a Packers game in Green Bay, you know.
Wow.
So being able to go on the field but even just like going out in the field and you know, doing some local stories with these guys too was just such an incredible experience. Seeing how they went about their business, seeing how they prepared for live shots, about how they interviewed people.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you know, to that point, I didn't really have a whole lot of interviewing experience. And if I wanted to be on air, which I did, you know, I had to learn how to act. I had to learn how to write in the field. I had to learn how to interview, right?
Yeah.
And that's such a tough skill for people, right?
Incredibly,
especially because a lot of times you will come into a story thinking that it's going to be one thing, and then somebody will say something. It's like, oh, the story goes in a completely different direction.
Correct. So from that point, were the guys that you were kind of like looking up to and following, were they opening to kind of mentoring you, or was it kind of like, hey, just follow me?
It was some mentoring. You know, it wasn't. They didn't want to hold your hand, right? Like
no.
with any internship, it's like they want to teach you the basics, but also like, you know, these are guys that are
Have a job.
They have a job,
yeah.
Right? And it's not to be your babysitter,
right?
And you know, I remember there was one time where I screwed something up and it made air, and Tom Pippins, again, a very accomplished sports anchor, Milwaukee legend, put the fear of God into me. He's like, if that happens again, I don't want to see you.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you bounce back?
I absolutely bounced back.
Yeah.
You know, I certainly finished the internship, but you know, it taught me a lot about paying attention to detail, right? Especially in some of these high profile, fast paced jobs, there is that tendency to skip a step. And, you know, we had blank air and like in television, that just cannot happen.
Nope.
So, you know, every piece of video that I added for Pip, and you know, just in general from there on out, had a lot of extra padding. There was no danger whatsoever of us hitting black.
Where did that then take you in your journey?
That took me to Rockford at CBS.
Rockford, and, okay.
Yeah. So I moved out to Rockford. I got a job as a general assignment reporter and photographer out there. From there, that led to NBC in the Quad Cities. And, you know...
All right, where in the Quad Cities? Because as someone who's married into a Quad City family, I need to...
So the NBC station was in Davenport, and I lived in Bettendorf and then Davenport later on. So it was a unique experience, to say the least. You know, local television 15, 20 years ago was, you learn a lot, especially, you know, in both markets. Mm-hmm. You're covering a two-state area, but, you know, as the weekend reporter especially, I'm covering, you know, three smaller stories in addition to my bigger story of the day, right? So that taught me a lot about writing and writing quickly. In small market television, you don't get a camera guy more often than not, right?
Right.
Like, so I was a one man band, right? I was shooting my own video, I was editing my own video, I was doing my own makeup before I went on the air, mm-hmm. right? I was voice tracking my own stories, and so it was an incredible experience in terms of multitasking. And as a result, you know, as a writer now, I think a lot quicker on my feet.
Yeah.
You know, going from topic to topic, especially too, right? In sports, you know, you're going from sport, which, you know, a little bit easier than going from, say, covering a house fire to covering a county fair to covering a board meeting or something like that, right?
How were you finding leads in that? Was there an assignment desk that I was doing, or were you were looking for
a combination of both? Yeah, a combination of both. You know, you are expected to come up with your own story ideas, and that can be tough too, especially on the weekends in the Quad Cities or in Rockford, right?
Right.
And radio as well. Like, nothing is handed to you, right? You know, there are going to be days where, like, the story of the day is obvious, right? Like, either there's a big announcement happening, there's a big traffic accident, what have you.
Right.
There are other days, and those are the days that really force you to be more creative, where the story of the day is not so obvious, right? Where you're going to get it sent out something, and... Like it might turn out to be a nothing burger, but like you gotta get something.
You gotta
out
find
it.
Something there, yeah, or gotta, find something that, or you are thinking about your audience,
right.
What's going to interest them,
right.
Or be that kind of tie in there,
right?
How long were you in the Quad Cities?
I was in the Quad Cities for 3 years.
For 3 years,
yeah, okay. and it came to kind of a crossroads where I kind of knew what I wanted to do with my life, but also I knew what I didn't want to do, and. You know, I would be lying if I said the salary didn't factor into it. You know, when I was in the Quad Cities, I was making $25,000 a year and working nights, weekends, and holidays. And you know, it became clearer and clearer towards the end of my tenure in the Quad Cities that life in local television was just not for me.
Right.
And so, you know, I moved back to my parents' place in Lake Zurich to kind of figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And you know, I thought the next natural step was going to be public relations, right? Mm-hmm. So I applied to a bunch of public relations firms, got a job at a local firm here in Chicago.
Oh, cool.
And it was a great experience, but I also it just wasn't the right fit, right?
From a fulfilling standpoint, or just like maybe other ways, right?
In other ways, yeah. It's just, you know, it was a culture thing. It was, you know, I just didn't fit in.
Yeah.
Right. And acknowledging that, you know, so especially at the time, it's hard, right? Because nobody wants to go into a job and you know, realize early on that, like, you know, hey, this isn't for me.
Right.
Right. So,
especially with that mindset where I still want to do a good enough job,
right,
that
right.
If I need these guys as a reference down the road,
right.
Maybe you don't, but,
right.
But, somebody's still going to see how you work in that.
Right. Picture. And the natural thing for a lot of us broadcasters, and I've talked to plenty over the years who are thinking about ending their careers in broadcasting, they want to switch to public relations, right? Well, and PR is a different story, especially when you are working for an agency, because you know, you have to appease the clients, right? The clients have expectations of where they want to be and the publications they want to be in and the type of story they want to tell. And, you know, From your side as a media guy, right, you don't always want the most PR-friendly angle.
No,
right?
Not always.
And also, the media is getting bombarded with pitches on a daily basis, right?
I could show you my inbox. Oh, my goodness.
There are only so many slots on WGN Radio. There are only so much. There's only so much room in the Chicago Tribune.
Right.
Right? So, you know, it taught me a lot about, you know, what I didn't want to do and what I did want to do. So, you know, after I left the PR firm, I was just kind of trying to figure out what's next, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I tried working at a PR agency. It didn't work out. So I wound up applying to sales jobs, right? And that kind of goes back to pivoting and thinking about how your previous roles apply to the roles that you want to do.
Yes.
Right? So in this case, I got a little bit smarter about my job search, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Yeah.
And I thought about how what I did in media relation or in media applied to a sales role, right? So a lot of cold calling, a lot of relationship building,
yeah,
a lot of multitasking, a lot of thinking on deadline. And so I retooled my resume. So like I had a marketing resume, I had a sales resume, and
journalism
resume. Yeah. Because it's not a one size fits all thing.
No,
right?
No.
And you might have a stellar radio resume, but if you were applying to, say, marketing at the Museum of Science and Industry, mm-hmm. how does what you do at WGN apply to that, right?
Yeah.
How do you translate that experience? And I think that is one of the biggest challenges facing a lot of job seekers today too.
Very much so.
Is cutting through the noise and having... Because recruiters are not taking a whole lot of time to look at your resume.
No.
Right? Like, if you don't catch their attention, it's just like any other marketing message, right?
Right.
If you don't catch their attention in the first 15 to 20 seconds, they're not gonna read on.
Right. Or you're uploading it to that, here is our jobs page,
right,
where it is so easy to get lost in there.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know I've looked at those resumes myself several times,
yeah,
at previous jobs. And, you know, I'm like, I don't know how you found this one, and why didn't this one make it through?
Right.
And then it becomes, how do I get this in front of an actual set of eyes? Did you find yourself having to do that
too?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you spend your entire career trying to cut through the clutter.
Yeah.
You know, the job world today is not what it was for your parents and for their parents,
no,
right? My dad got a job at Allstate in the 70s, and he stayed there until he retired. Right.
Wow.
Like, just 40 years at Allstate, I think, or something along those lines. And it's not like that anymore, right? You are going to change careers. You're going to change employers. You're going to change career paths. It is going to happen. Sometimes it's your choice. Sometimes it's not your choice.
Yeah. Another reminder to check out careervision.org,
yeah,
actually. Really fitting there. But yeah, so, okay. So back to that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No,
but it was like, hey, look at that.
No,
sponsor would love that.
No, you're totally fine. And,
yeah,
you know, sometimes it means asking for help when it comes to,
yes,
to your career is one of the hardest things you could possibly do.
Very much so.
Because it means acknowledging the fact that, you know, A, you don't know what you're doing with your life, and B, you don't know how to get to where you're going.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's some advice that I wish I had taken, you know, 15, 20 years ago when I was pivoting away from television, and trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
You know, but along the lines of, you know, when I was trying to find a full-time job, I was still in the process of building my personal brand, right?
Yeah.
And having that personal brand and having people that know who you are and paying attention to you and are rooting for you, if you do nothing else in your life, do that. Build up your personal brand,
yeah,
and figure out, you know, who you are and what makes you different.
Is this about when social media started becoming important to you?
Yeah, it is when social, you know,
yeah.
Twitter's gotten toxic.
Oh yeah,
that's no secret. But
yeah,
you know, Chicago Twitter in the early 2010s,
yep,
was a place where you could go and meet friends. You could, you know, build legitimate business connections. I used to interview sources for sports stories through Twitter DM.
Like,
and there are other platforms out there now, and they're going to continue being platforms where you can, you know, build a name for yourself and show who you are and what you're interested in. I think LinkedIn right now,
yeah,
is a great place to go more for the networking aspect,
right,
than the jobs. You know, yes, they have a job board, but it helps to connect with past and potentially future employers too.
Right, right. So when you were using Twitter, do you remember when you first jumped on there? Because
my first ever tweet was about getting Taco Bell before the 10 o'clock newscast in Davenport, Iowa. Like, and I look back on that, you know, Twitter has always been a stream of consciousness thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you and I know each other, and I've been lucky.
It's true, and I didn't even know you were from Lake Zurich until maybe 5 years into, you know, following you,
yeah,
honestly.
No, it's, and I've been lucky from that regard that people do pay attention to what I say on the internet. But you know, I had no idea what I was doing back then. Like, even now, when it comes to my own personal social media, I don't have a strategy. It's more like, hey, this is cool. Let's do it, right? But Twitter is how I got my current job. Like, my boss has followed me on Twitter for years, and you know, one day I mentioned about how I was looking for a job, and he's like, he direct messaged me. He's like, hey, have you ever thought about coming and working for me? I was like, well, I don't have any experience in the senior care market, which is, you know, what the space that we're in right now.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, but you know how to build and engage an audience. And so 3.5 years later, it's worked out for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think part of it was he just liked me. But part of it was, you know, him and I got along, and finding a boss and finding coworkers that you get along with is as key to your success as finding a line of work that you truly enjoy.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, kind of similarly, I also had to do brand building.
Yeah.
And the way to do that was social media at the time. I know the first person I followed on Twitter was Amari Stoudemire, because NBA players were why you got on Twitter at the time. But it was, okay, I am right now severely underemployed, is how I would put it.
Yeah.
Contract job.
Yeah.
But I had a strategy where I need to make sure maybe I post at least once a day.
Right.
So I have exposure. What are things that people are jumping on social media for? Well, back then it was your award shows.
Yeah.
It was the games that everyone was tweeting along with, because that was the beauty of Twitter at the time, is that it was real time.
Right.
And you were going to find someone that was reacting to somebody. You didn't even have quote tweets back then. You had to copy paste and put RT into that. and that's how you kind of grew on that. And then treating a platform like Facebook, I kind of had a radio producer mentality where I was engaging my audience every day with a question of the day. And then I started building a blog, which in turned into polling and tournaments and things like that.
Yeah.
And then someone recommended me to another friend who was like, hey, this person, he's been doing a lot with social media and building a following there.
Right.
Maybe consider him for your social media coordinator job.
Right, right.
So coming back to, you've found a job, you're finding a path, you have coworkers.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened from there?
From with going back to when I was in sales or going back to so I wound up getting my foot in the door at the Tribune the Tribune to this day, aside from the Brewers, was the biggest break in my media career, because I was doing some freelance writing. I was freelancing for ESPN.com at the time, oddly enough.
Really?
Yeah.
So how did that work?
I shot my shot, for lack of a better way of putting it. You know, there was one night I couldn't sleep, and I think it was 2010, so I was still about 27, 28 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was reading the old Page 2 section on ESPN.com.
Yeah.
And I just researched an editor. It was like, you know, hey, I'm here in Chicago. I'd like to do some work for you. And she thankfully liked my stuff and like, go ahead and pitch me, right? And now when you're a freelancer, when you're a freelance writer especially, it's not guaranteed income,
right?
So you have to figure out what makes you stand apart and why these websites want you to write for them.
Right.
And, you know, especially with some of these sports sites, you have to come up with something different, because anybody can write a gamer,
right?
And I see that so often on these blogs. It's like, okay, well, what's different? Like, what angle are you taking that's different? Are you noticing... Yeah. Are you going to be a stat guy? Are you going to be what is making this player tick?
Mm-hmm.
And so my lane wound up being sports stories for people who don't care about sports. I had been freelancing for ESPN for about a year or so at the time. And then I got my sales job at the Tribune. And I've been trying to write for Red Eye, which was the Tribune sister publication at the time, geared towards, you know, young urban professionals. I had a great crossword puzzle, which everybody loved. But it allowed us to chase butterflies, and Red Eye to this day is the best gig I've ever had, right?
Yeah.
Because I got to do stuff like change light bulbs on the roof of the Sears Tower. I got to, you know, do an eating contest. I got to watch Pat Bertoletti eat a goat, right? Pat, the guy
that's
from the Nathan's Hot Dog Contest.
That's right. Chicago's very own.
So, but I got my foot in the door at the Tribune, and I was selling career builder ads, but also...
Okay.
I did something that was, I mean, probably wildly inappropriate, but I emailed an editor there and was like, you know, hey, I want to write for Red Eye, you know, is there any way I could do that? And, you know, I sent him some clips from ESPN because, again, I had to prove to him that if I wanted this fun job, I had to show that I could do it.
Yeah, I have a reason for you to give me a chance. Right. What you're saying. Yeah.
You know, so a lot of it is tooting your own horn, too, and being able to show why you are the best fit, because nothing in my career has been handed to me at all.
Yeah.
At all. Going back to when I got my internship with the Brewers, I physically hand-wrote notes and sent them out to every Major League Baseball team and a bunch of minor league teams in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and most of them I didn't hear back, right? Most of them, it was a thanks, but no thanks form letter. So, you know, the same thing with writing, right? I would shoot my shot to all these websites and all these media outlets hoping, and sometimes I wouldn't hear back. Sometimes it was, you know, we're not interested. But all it takes is one person to say yes. And, and in my case, it was Brian Moore, who was the sports editor at Red Eye at the time. Yeah. And still a good friend of mine. You know, him and I have kept in touch over the years. And so
I got to talk to Brian Moore on this podcast, I think.
Awesome guy. He's a great guy. He's had a heck of a career himself. Yeah. So, you know, I was lucky in that, you know, in my 20s, I was able to freelance on the side, but also, you know, do my full-time job. So I did sales for a while, realized I didn't have a skin thick enough for cold calling, because that's what selling career builder ads at the Tribune was at the time. It was cold calling 120 contacts a day.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times you're getting hung up on. So, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in sales, absolutely. But
but
sales is not for everybody because just of the sheer volume of rejection that you deal with.
You really have to, like you said, build a thick skin to that and also understand that it's a numbers game for everybody.
Right.
So the sales job at the Tribune.
Yeah.
And you are getting to do Red Eye.
Yeah.
So I guess what happened next is the easy question.
So I wanted a software sales role.
Yeah.
Did that for about a year. Again, realized that sales wasn't my jam. Mm-hmm. And so again, back to the old drawing board, right? And I was lucky enough to find a trade publication called Internet Retailer Magazine that I wound up staying with for about three and a half years. I was a research analyst for a little bit, and then I was an editor there, right? So at one point, I'd gotten pigeonholed as being a sports guy, right? Like, I'll never forget that earlier in my career, you know, right around the time I was doing the sales for the Tribune, I'd gone in for an interview with a major insurer, we'll put it that way. I know exactly who it is. I'm not going to name them.
Yeah, yeah.
And the hiring manager was looking at my resume, and I'll never forget this, Mike. He's like, you know, you've got a lot of great experience, but you know, can he write about something other than sports? Because he was focusing on the Brewers. He was focusing on the Indiana Firebirds. He was focusing on ESPN.com. And I looked at him, and I was like, I have a master's degree in journalism and a bachelor's degree in psychology. I'm not like... Not just a sports guy.
Yeah.
But that has really informed my career as well. Because since then, I mean, I don't even remember this guy's name, but I've been trying to prove him wrong. Right.
Uh-huh.
And so since then, you know, I wrote about tech for the Sun-Times back when they had a business section that was focused heavily on startups.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Wound up doing features for the Tribune. So now I'm in the senior care market, right, where we've got five publications that everything from senior housing news to behavioral health business. We've got five main brands, a couple emerging brands. You know, so I'm not writing about sports anymore. You know, I think it's okay to chase those dream jobs, but you also have to have a backup plan to some degree as well.
Right.
Because either you're going to get sick of the schedule, you're going to want to make more money, or eventually the opportunity is just going to dry up.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not trying to be negative or anything like that. It's the reality of the business. And you know, in the case of my sports writing, like, you know, once Red Eye went away and a lot of these papers, they don't have the budget anymore.
No.
For sports or for some of these other fun stuff. So, you know, pivoted away and you know, it's worked out, right? I've also been very fortunate to have all of the opportunities that I've had over the course of my career.
Right. You can look back and be like, hey, I had a lot of fun here.
Yeah.
So marketing.
Marketing.
What got you to that?
I
Where did you find, like, hey, you've had the sales experience, you've had the writing experience.
Right. It's combining that.
Right.
Right. And you know, I think where I've always had the most success is being able to build relationships internally. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, in my current job, I'm working with my sales team to figure out, you know, okay, what's working and what's not. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot of client relationship management as well, you know, and some product management, right? Yeah. So working with our clients to set deadlines, set expectations, you know, get them their deliverables on time. And, you know, with five brands, it's a lot of plate juggling, right?
Yep.
and being able to communicate with internal stakeholders, but also set the expectation with the external stakeholders so that they're getting what they want. And if they're not getting what they want, you know, if we're running a marketing campaign for them, you know, trying to figure out how we could pivot.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And determining, you know, do we need more email? Do we need to do more social? Do we need to change the message? Like,
yeah,
analyzing the open rates, the click rates, and everything like that.
There is a lot of numbers, or are a lot of numbers. That was really good grammar by me.
Yeah.
Are a lot of numbers in marketing. Because like you said, it's figuring out what works, what doesn't.
Right.
How do we adjust, get to... And I think it might be the first time I use this term, KPIs.
Right, right, right.
For
right.
the people you are working for, the people who make those decisions. How do you think since – what are some ways you've grown since the beginning of this conversation with high school till now? I know. This is a very this is almost a therapy session.
You know, I got humbled very quickly in my career because I came into my first job in Rockford thinking that I knew everything about everything, and I got shown that I did not very, very quickly. And getting humbled was something I absolutely needed because I was a 23 year old hothead.
Yep.
And I resented him at the time, but I needed a news director to put me squarely in my place as a small market television personality making 20 grand a year.
Yeah.
Right. I keep on coming back to the salary thing because that's also, you know, that drove me early in my career. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, the older you get, the more you realize that salary isn't necessarily everything either. Right. You know, everybody wants to make a living, but you know, at the end of the day, you and I are both parents.
Yep.
We want to have that work-life balance. I don't want to be thinking about
my goodness. Do we ever?
Yeah, yes. I don't want to be thinking about my job when I'm playing with my daughter.
Right.
Right. So, you know, I want to earn a good living. Sure. I want to be able to take vacations and all that, but I also don't want to be stressed out of my mind all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's finding that balance and figuring out, if you find a good employer, that's the biggest challenge, right?
Yep.
So,
and it's really also the different kind of eras in your life where your priorities are going to be changing over the time. Like you said, you became a parent.
Yeah.
You have a family.
Right.
You're like, I don't want that time to be impeded by my job. It's not, my job's not the most important thing. My family is,
right.
But my job is going to help support my family.
Well, because when I was chasing those dreams of being a sports writer, yep. Right, when I was working the sales and PR and doing my ESPN and Red Eye and the media stuff on the side, I would be up writing until 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, right? Because again, as a freelancer, if I don't put points on the board, I'm not getting dollars in the bank.
Right.
So, but now the idea of doing that, like, you know, again, like I mentioned, once 4:30, 5 o'clock rolls around, I don't want to be working anymore.
Yeah. I think marketing is a profession that a lot of young people know about.
Right.
But they don't maybe know everything that goes into it. And I hear from young people that, like, I wanted to get into sports marketing. I
right.
wanted this and that. What advice do you have for a young person that is interested in marketing? But you've got the experience you had. What do you tell that person?
Marketing means a million different things to a million different people.
Yes, it does. It is.
Right. And marketing in a business-to-business capacity like I do is way different than marketing in a business-to-consumer capacity, yep. like, you know, trying to sell cheese or something like that.
Yeah.
Right. You also have to be willing to stay up on trends and figure out where the puck is heading, for lack of a better way of putting
How
it.
How do you stay on top of trends? Because I see that and I know I have to do it too, but like, how do you do that?
I staying informed, right? Yeah. Staying informed, you know, reading LinkedIn and following people on LinkedIn that you admire, reading the news, right? If you want to, you know, tech news, I read the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, Block Club every day.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is so I understand what's happening in Chicago, but also, you know, part of it is I want to know what's happening in the bigger picture, right? From a business perspective. reading industry-focused publications, so huge, right? Media is evolving. It's certainly not dying. I'm not saying that because I'm in a radio studio right now.
Right.
But, you know, and understanding that what your job looks like now is not what it's going to look like 5 years from now, right?
Right.
Because I remember I was a graduate student in Miami when Facebook came out. And social media was considered an afterthought for the first part of my career.
Right.
You know, I had bosses ask me why I was spending so much time on social media. Now it's like, okay, well, what's our social media strategy for an event? What are we doing to drive more traffic from our social media platforms, right? I'm being judged in part on our social media growth.
Right.
But, you know, that being said, you know, we talk about building and growing an audience. You mentioned how you did it on Facebook. I mentioned doing it on Twitter. Yeah. LinkedIn is kind of the – but you're not going to – you can only chase so many shiny objects, right? Yeah. And there's a lot of shiny objects in social media. So figuring out, you know, which one resonates the most for your personal brand, but also for your employer, mm-hmm. right? A great example. I'll get people asking me when we're going to get on TikTok as a brand. I'm like, our audience is not on TikTok.
Exactly right. Yeah. I think our WGN radio audience, you know what? Perfect for Facebook.
Oh yeah,
I mean the demographic we have, perfect for Facebook, right. Twitter to an extent, but mostly that's what fits here.
Right.
So yeah, back. So how do you tell that person, hey, we don't need TikTok? Maybe
show them the numbers.
Right.
Show them the numbers, and it's all about understanding who your audience is. Mm-hmm. Right. And in our case, my boss and I have been through the web traffic numbers, and we know that 95 to 97% of our social traffic to our mm-hmm. website comes from LinkedIn.
Yep.
So because of that, it certainly informed our strategy. You know, before we would post on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, now it's all LinkedIn all the time because you know, as somebody who handles, you know, the email marketing and the social media marketing and the client and does wears as many hats as I do, I don't have the time to be chasing rabbits that aren't going to be, you know, producing my dinner, for mm-hmm. lack of a better way of putting it, right? So if we know that what we're doing on LinkedIn is working, then let's build and refine our LinkedIn strategy, right? Like whether that is getting quotes from executives who are speaking at our events mm-hmm. and using those to promote our events. Right, drive and using that to drive event interest and event ticket sales.
Yeah,
right. This is one example, but so when you know who your audience is and you understand what their patterns of usage are, that helps inform your strategy versus like, oh yeah, hey, Blip Blop just came out, right? Some imaginary new social media platform. Yeah. We should be on that, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a presence on every social media platform. Now, if you want to do that for yourself and experiment with building your own brand that way, that's fine. But like, you know, for TikTok, a great example. TikTok is not for everybody. I've tried TikTok. Most of my TikToks are just of me ranting into a camera because that nobody needs to see me dance or you know, make a souffle or something like that. Right? That's not my brand. That's not who I am.
What do they want to hear from you?
Well, that's a good question, Mike. I know that. It was funny. Some guy recognized me from Twitter one day a couple weeks ago, and he's like, you don't know who's paying attention to your tweets. I'm like, I absolutely know who is paying attention to my tweets, right? It's people who like Wrigleyville and who are Cubs fans and you know, enjoy going to Murphy's Bleachers or some of these other bars around the ballpark, right? I at least know who I am. I'm a Chicago guy through and through, and that is why people pay attention to anything that I say on the internet. Mm-hmm. If I start tweeting about minor league baseball teams in North Carolina, much as I enjoy them, nobody's going to care. But if I tweet something like, oh yeah, I wonder if the Pope's had Malort, you know, it's going viral.
Yeah.
So, which is not the most professional example, but it's understanding who you are and who is paying attention to you. And as far as marketing goes, the why they're paying attention to your personal brand, why they're paying attention to your employer.
Matt, I could talk to you for probably like five more hours, but this has been a lot of fun, and I think we're going to have to do a part two specifically because I've wanted to talk to you about work from home, like Zerk of all things, but I appreciate you coming on here. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah.
We should definitely do a follow-up though.
Yeah.
So thanks for everyone listening. Thanks to Career Vision, who you should go check out at careervision.org and on WGNRadio.com. We are where they are publishing articles on a monthly basis, as well as this podcast. So thanks so much, Matt. Thanks for coming down here.
Thanks, Mike. It's been a pleasure.